Welcome back to Red Receipt, a podcast by Antidote, the email and SMS marketing agency by people who hate boring email. We do a deep dive into the how and why of brand building, from blueprints to launch day, customers as community, and the detours in between. Big lessons and easy listening. I'm excited to introduce today's guest on the podcast, Melissa Palmer. Melissa is the CEO of the natural skincare brand Osea, a family-owned line of skincare originally developed by her mom while Melissa was still in high school. I had a great time talking through the process of building a lasting brand, running a family-owned and operated business, personal growth, and how COVID could potentially change the way they work in the future. I'm excited to share this fun conversation and hope you guys enjoy. Yeah, I always like to start out just learning about your background and what you did before Osea. I know Osea is a, I don't want this to sound like a bad term, I don't think it is, but a family business, correct?
I mean, it could be a bad term.
Why would that be a bad term?
No, only people who are in family businesses that are like,
Yeah, that's why I didn't want you to feel like that.
No, it's not like that at all. We're a full-fledged family business. My mom created all of the products, and then I helped her launch the products. So we've been at this together for a really long time. And my sister and my dad also work in the business.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That is a full-fledged family business.
Full-fledged. And I'm the oldest in the family. So I'm just the boss. My poor little sister has worked for me in two companies now. We're like 10 years deep. I've always been her boss.
So you mean you had a previous business? Or you're currently running two businesses?
So I had a company in between this business. First of all, I'll say the topic of your podcast is like the only thing I actually ever want to talk about because I like talking about business more than anything. And a lot of times it gets like very detailed about products and I love our products, but like I love talking about business. So yes, I did. I had a unique opportunity to both start this business, like in high school, work on it for a long time, get frustrated that it didn't grow. And then I left and started another business, which is like going to business school, how I describe that experience. I helped start a hula hoop company, which is Hula Hoop Dance and Fitness, which then turned into actually a multi-million dollar hula hoop business with like every up and down in a business, like from going on Good Morning America and selling like $800,000 of a handmade product that we didn't have to like having no money, just every bit of a wild ride. And then I came back to Osea just about 5 years ago.
And was your family still building Osea while you were off doing the other business?
So Osea grew just like 10% every year for 15 years, pretty much. Just little inch by inch by inch. And then I came back 5 years ago and blew it up.
I'm like, so did your mom start working on the products as like knowing that she was going to start a business, or did you see her working on products and then want to start a business from what she was making?
So she started the products wanting to start a business, but she was also a single mom who like supported us and she's a body worker and did a lot of healing work. So she worked so hard supporting us. So it was like a side hobby. And my siblings and I like always just helped, but her vision was always to start a product, but she worked on the product honestly for like 15 years before we launched. And technically we started in the 80s.
That is crazy. I know. So wait, you said that you left the business and started your other business, the Hula Hoop brand, because you were frustrated that Osea wasn't growing. What do you think was like, what was going on with the business that it wasn't growing? Or were you like in high school, in college, frustrated working in a family business as well?
I've actually never been, like, my whole story has never been, oh, I'm frustrated working in a family business. I think where that came from is I was in college and I was at a time of life when I was like wanting to be really risky and I wanted to do like wild things and grow so much faster. And my business partners were very conservative, AKA my parents. And I had all of these ideas that weren't really based on experience. And also I was their child. And so there was a certain, let's say, lack of pleasantness in my voice when I would say, do it this way, let's do it this way. And it was just all of my, like, my energy and my ideas. So leaving the business was actually the best thing that I ever did because I was able to go and prove myself in another arena and came back to the business in a completely different dynamic where I had really learned some lessons of some ups and downs and like what was possible. And the real plus is in the hula hoop business, that was growing at the exact same moment that social media and direct-to-consumer sales were really growing. And I would say probably one of my biggest strengths as an entrepreneur is just insane curiosity. And I also just like love technology and hacking. So I like got into coding and like learned all about social media. And I found like I got to really focus on marketing in a way I think that I'd always wanted to. But in like the early 2000s when we were growing Osea, we were a wholesale business. It was totally different. And so going to learn this whole new skill set and grow another company allowed me to bring like a much more grounded energy into growing the business where I could say, okay, I have done this and I know this is going to work.
What ended up happening with the hula hoop business? And how did you come up with the idea to launch that?
So I just got really addicted to hula hooping. I don't know if you've ever been to Burning Man.
I have not.
All of the hoopers out there. And it's this really kind of like fringy flow arts practice, kind of like circus arts.
I haven't ever been to Burning Man, but I might botch his name. Do you know the name of the artist who designs and builds I think it's called the churches at Burning Man, mm-hmm. like the main buildings that they burn down.
Oh, the big temples. Yeah.
Yeah. So my sister is friends with that guy's daughter and I've stayed at his house up in Marin where he like designs and builds of those, structures. And so I've gotten to see like all of his art cars that he has up there. His property is insane.
So you've had a little taste.
Yeah, a little taste.
Well,
sorry to deviate, but.
Oh, a great deviation. Well, when Burning Man is here in 2021, an opportunity might arise to go, you'll see there's a whole bunch of hula hoopers. And I just got totally hooked on it. And decided like I had to share this. It was my passion and I felt like it was such a transformative practice. I wanted to share it with other people. And everyone kept making fun of me until someone who was a friend and business advisor who really mocked me for the idea the most met someone who just started a hula hoop company, introduced me, and then I helped grow and take it from there. And my business partner in that company ended up taking the business over. Truthfully, she was going through a really volatile divorce and I wasn't able to do anything in the business. And it became so frustrating that I started tinkering with Osea and it all went from there.
And then when you started working on Osea again, what was the main difference that social media had kind of started to shift the way that people were shopping, or?
I would say the main difference was, yeah, I took the business from being like 99% wholesale and built direct to consumer, and like started social media, online sales, things that you hear about a lot now that 5 years ago were really just at the beginning.
And what do you think, was it like a system that you had done or had built while working on the Hula Hoop company, or was it just more like realizing that the digital space was growing and then starting to experiment with new ideas in that world?
I think more than a system, it's like, to me, I would say like my number one passion is marketing, and specific direct to consumer marketing. But marketing as a whole, period. And it was really just more of a skill set, which is like an ever-changing set of tools, because the number one skill I think one needs in marketing is the ability to change and adapt. So I just learned how to do it.
And when you came back to OSEA, was OSEA supporting like the family?
Yes.
So the business was up and running, and then you were really kind of jumping in to grow it in a different direction than your family had been focusing on.
I wouldn't say in a different direction, just in a highly accelerated direction.
What do you think, like early on, I guess I'm like interested in the actual tactics of it. Like, how did you start to accelerate it so quickly in the beginning days of coming back?
I think the fundamental thing that makes OSEA special is the product. And so it's honestly, and I know that most people feel this way about their products, so it doesn't sound like a special thing, but it just is an amazing product and it works. And before we were growing, it had this cultish following of those who knew about the products. So there's this insane brand loyalty for, actually, it really wasn't brand loyalty, because the brand was like kind of confusing. It was product loyalty. So I use that as the starting place for all my marketing. And my number one strategy was to get the products on the faces of as many people as possible. And since we're totally self-funded and there was no crazy marketing budget to do that with, tactically, I just went after Instagram, and I went after really weird pockets of Instagram. So while other brands were starting to work with like beauty and fashion influencers, I was going after homeschooling moms, or like small religious communities, or vegan chefs, which was even more fringy at that time, or chefs or like nurses. We have a huge community of nursing influence, like nurses that are influencers. So my strategy was just like find as many customers, because we have a hugely diverse customer base. Like, we're not just speaking to one person, which is a challenge and is a huge opportunity. So my tactic was just to find pockets and make sure people were seeing the products multiple times in those pockets.
And were you doing like influencer, like promotional deals with them in a sense?
Always. We would just send the product. It again comes back to the product. My sister and I worked on all this. She's been running our influencers for like 5 years. And she would just DM them and say, oh, we really love what you're doing. Can we send you some product? And, they would all, you know, consistently fall in love with the product and then post about it. And we always explained, we're a family business. We can't afford to pay for placements, but if you like the products, we'd love if you share.
That's awesome. I feel like that creates such like an organic way of people sharing about something. Obviously, they actually like it and they're not just...
You can tell the difference.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, fast forward 5 years, and that's the number one most important thing in marketing is authenticity. And I think we're all so just immune to even listening to an influencer pitch something that you can tell they don't like.
Yeah. Or they're, or, you know, they're like, that's their main source of income.
Yeah.
Is advertising for products that they typically don't publicly say that they're advertising for.
Yeah.
Or they try and get around it in different ways.
There's definitely ones, a lot of influencers who do use that as their form of income. But I also feel there's a certain authenticity the successful ones bring, because they will really only work with something they believe in.
And have you, is that still your a strategy that you guys use? And like, you haven't necessarily changed to more bigger paid partnerships with influencers? I don't mean like all in, I just mean in general.
Yeah, it is. And there are certain platforms, like on YouTube, it takes a lot of work to create a YouTube video. So we have such a limited budget, and with what we do have, we try and put it towards YouTube because there's a lot of time invested.
And in terms of marketing outside of the influencer network, like, was there other tactics that you used in order to grow the visibility of the brand?
Yes. I mean, any way, I would say I'll pretty much try anything. I've done a lot of in-person events, and I think that it's the accumulation of trying everything. Today, I'd say in the past 3 hours is my example of trying everything. I did an Instagram live on one of our brand partners. I planned out the feed, reviewed photos from influencers. I did a Pinterest new content creator platform launch. And then I got to do like a lot of other less fun operational stuff. But which of those like three marketing activities is going to really move the needle? I'm not really sure, but it's the accumulation of trying so many different avenues.
It's funny because I love the idea of, this is how I live, like constantly learning new things and actually doing them yourself. I think a lot of people have an idea of owning a business that you're like, I don't know, you should be much more like hands off in a way. And I always laugh at the idea of that, because like digital based businesses is so much about doing things instead of just talking about them. Like, from everybody that I've talked to, the entrepreneurs that I've seen be extremely successful, like, they're all very much in the execution mode of trying new things constantly and trying to find like ways to move away from the norm of the ways that things are done and find something new and interesting that works. So it's nice to hear that you're...
Well, truthfully, if I've used this quarantine time for anything, I've used it as a total excuse to get back in the weeds of marketing, in part because our business has totally shifted. Our wholesale business has not completely gone away, but substantially quieted, because it was primarily catering to hotels and spas, which are all currently closed. And our direct-to-consumer business has become the core of our business. So it's given me permission to get so aggressively involved in it again. And I have to say, I love it. I'm having so much fun, and I can see the impact. And so it's been a really great reminder about that same exact thing of being totally involved. And of course, there's a balance, and I have an incredible team who now is, you know, I'm like fully back on the marketing team and loving it. But I really believe in hands-on, and I think one thing that we do differently in our marketing. We do everything in-house. And even like our paid, our search or SEO will work with a freelancer versus an agency so that they have a super close connection to us. And, you know, even like,
have you always worked that way? Like, is your, like if you don't know how to do it yourself or internally, not just you, but then it's hard to hire for something that you're not really clear on.
Anyways. I always will get a consultant to teach us, but I usually like to hack and figure something out first and then have someone else do it. But I just find that doing things in-house, it like continues to speak to our brand authenticity. And we've gone to a lot of agencies, and when they get ready to pitch us on what a bad job we're doing, they usually are always surprised, because we care the most. And so we treat everything with that same tactics. Our SEO person has been working with us for years. She, you know, she's a freelancer, but she's amazing, and she catches stuff we would never catch. And then that informs our website, and she finds, you know, she comes to our, she uses our products, she gets facials, we see her, we talk to her, and she has a sense of being on our team, and it makes such a difference, because marketing is just like a web of constant information. And the more transparency we can get, like if we learn that a keyword is doing really well through Google, then that might trickle down into everything we're doing next.
How is your team structured internally? Like, especially now with all of the changes with COVID, how has that changed the way you guys are working in general?
Well, our team had, so one part of our team has always been totally remote, which is the wholesale business. And they're the ones who talk to spas and stores and manage that whole side. And then our marketing and operations has all been in a office. Plus we also have, which is currently closed, a store and skincare studio in Venice. So all of that was based in our office in Venice, which was behind our store. And we had some little side offices next to it. And in a sense, everything is kind of the same, except now we're all remote. So like the teams, funny enough, I still have the same struggles. I have challenged to like bring everyone together as a team. So I'm constantly working to evolve that. But we use Slack, and we had been using Slack for years. So that's been an actual lifesaver. And it's really crazy, but we've been working remote for 5 weeks, and I would say we've hit another level of optimization and ease, and I think our output has actually massively increased.
Do you think you'll change the way you guys work moving 100%. Forward?
No chance we'll ever go back to what we had.
That's so great.
It's so great. And what's so crazy is I was just about to sign a lease on a huge office, and I was kind of going against my inclination of like, you know what, we need to be in an office, we all need to be under one roof. And I had the lease in my inbox and was about to sign it, and just was so lucky that I didn't, because it was a substantial amount of increased overhead and so much space to grow into. That I think now we'll likely end up keeping our small office and do a large portion of work remote, and then with in-person time and staggered teams. I'm not sure what it will look like, but across the board, everyone agrees, like, wow, this is really working.
It's so funny. Like, I've always been a fan of remote work. Our group works remotely and has for years, so it didn't really change the way that we work. But I think everybody's like acceptance of working remotely has changed in a way. And also, it's just like, to me, it's common sense somewhat outside of the culture aspect of things. Like, obviously, if you have quiet time and you can focus on getting something done, you're going to be far more effective in it than if you have a bunch of shit going on around you, distracting you while you're doing things. How do you think, like, the culture aspect, are you thinking that you're going to have the, like, a centralized office where people can go and work when they want to, but then work remotely when that makes more sense for their own life?
I think that's what we'll do. I could see it being team staggered, where, you know, maybe marketing is in one day a week, and meetings are really focused that day. But I think it's just going to depend on what the needs are and what's working best. I also always worked, I didn't have an office until, I think my first office in my life was 10 years ago. And then the first OSEA office, well, the OSEA office was always in my parents' garage. And then I ran it out of my apartment 5 years ago. And then we slowly started having some offices, one of which was my brother's living room when his roommates were gone, like 3 years ago. It's a great, actually, office setup. His
that
roommates
is crazy.
Were gone during the day. We worked in the living room, and then we'd swap off.
That is crazy. So 5 years ago or 3 years ago, you were still running OSEA out of either your apartment or your brother's.
5 years ago with two people.
How many people are involved in OSEA today?
Well, that has unfortunately transitioned with some changes in our team we've made. Currently, we have 20 people on our team.
That is massive compared to two people in an apartment.
Yeah.
And you said that OSEA has been completely self-funded.
Totally.
That's wild.
It's, you just sell products. That's the funding.
Yeah. Do you have general thoughts on, like, the structure of venture capital and how people are taught to build businesses today? Not that you have to comment on it. I'm just curious.
I mean, it's such a present conversation in my head and in my life, because I get outreach from venture capitalists every day. And there's something so interesting about the idea of having someone else's money, and not just someone else's money, having actual, like, large amounts of money. Because if I want to do something, I need to make some money first. Or if I'm going to do something, it has to make money right away. So the idea of having millions of dollars, I don't even know how to think like that. Like,
do you think it would help you or hurt you?
I don't know. And it's hard to say, because I think fundamentally my philosophy is, like, when people ask the question, are you profitable? The answer is, like, of course, there's just no other choice. Like, we have to be. And it's caused me, you know, it's taught me how to be a really resourceful entrepreneur and how to be very clear on our finances constantly, and also how to really stretch the resources that we do have. So I absolutely see competitors. You know, we started in this space when there was no such thing as clean beauty, which is technically the space we're in. I didn't even realize we were in beauty till, like, 3 years ago. I just thought of us as, like, a wellness product, but it wasn't even the word wellness, because we were just, like, a natural product is how I saw us in that category. And now clean beauty is this incredibly hot space, and even more so, skincare is the key space. And I definitely am very conscious of competitors who have started within the past 3 years and have been able to get where we are or grow beyond us, in just instant rapid time. So on the one hand, I absolutely can see how increased resources would give us so much increased opportunity. And also, one of the things that I really love about OSEA is that we run the company the way that we want to. And our focus is on our product. And I know even just around our cost of goods and our margins, probably that's the first thing someone would want to change about our company, because the piece I was talking about earlier about our products being so great, there is a logical reason for that. And it's because we just spend more money on the ingredients than most companies are willing to. But it's like marketing dollars. It works. And we have an insane return rate of customers. So it's a long answer, but that's like part of the long thought process. Do I think that in terms of immediate lifts in revenue, would VC money help us? For sure. Is it the right path for us long term as a company or brand? I'm not sure.
So this is more of like a current thought exercise that you're exploring. Totally. I think also, though, you're in a different space. Like, I don't know, for the brands that started and probably saw a space that you guys were already involved in and developing products around, like for them to go out and raise money from the beginning creates a very different dynamic than if you guys were to go out and raise money now. I say that because, like, you know, like how you say the one skill you need is like being able to adapt and learn new things. Like, in a way, you've already, as a group, probably, I'm assuming, as a group, you've already learned how to do that because you have to. Mm-hmm. So now bringing in money at this stage probably wouldn't affect the like identity of the group as much. Whereas if you brought in money immediately, like basically you guys learned how to make money, and the other group would learn how to spend money initially.
Yes.
And then they wouldn't have the skill set, or they would have a harder time learning the making money portion when it came down to the time where they had to become profitable.
That's such a good way of thinking about it. I love that. I actually have a hard time spending money. I know how to make money.
Yeah. So you would have to learn the aspect of, like, if the money hit the account, then you actually have to spend it.
That's what I mean, because I know that probably sounds crazy to say, oh, if we had millions of dollars just sitting there to spend.
I don't think it sounds like...
I've never existed like that as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I don't think it sounds that crazy knowing that you actually... I mean, to me, it's weird. Like, we live in a weird time. I was saying this on the podcast with Good Milk. Like, all... So let's say you went to school right now and you went to, like, a top university in the U.S., and you were interested in becoming an entrepreneur, chances are you would go into a course and they would teach you all about the machine that is venture capital. And they would teach you, like, here's how you should build a business. The business should not make money for like the first 5 or 10 years. And the entire structure of it has nothing to do with making money in the beginning. It's all about inflated equity over time. Like, that's a very weird dynamic to teach a bunch of young people that are ultimately setting out to make money in some facet.
Well, especially considering that dynamics, I think, is rapidly changing.
Oh yeah. Especially in my view now with the whole COVID experience, like, I don't think people are going to be as okay with, like, for you guys, Osea, let's say over the past 5 years, you've been doing really well. You guys have been growing. You've been making money, as a self-funded business has to. Like, those are 5 great years of owning and running a business.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side of it is, like, if you raised money at the beginning and your objective was to grow as fast as possible and to spend the money, like, I don't know, those 5 years wouldn't be as great because you would be waiting for the future, not reaping any of the rewards in the moment. It's all future based.
Totally.
Which is kind of a weird dynamic in and of itself. It's like your whole life is wrapped around a future time that doesn't even necessarily ever exist.
That's one of the most, like, esoteric ways of looking at the money that I've heard. And I have to say that I love it, because right now, and you know, this is a particular moment on month two of COVID, and I can't imagine being in this moment living for the future.
Yeah, it's funny, because even the fact that you're that you're laying down right now, like, tells me about you and like the setup of your life, or like the pressures in your life influence the way that you do things, obviously. And I think a lot of other people, like, the fact that you were laying down said a lot about, to me at least, like, the fact that you don't have external investors, that you're worried about what they think or like their view of how you're doing things, would change the way that you run the business, which to me is like, I don't know, it's great to work the way that you want to work and that you want to do things.
Okay. Well, I'm really passionate about this topic. This morning, I woke up at 9:30.
That is amazing.
I woke up at 8:45, which was like highly excellent for me.
Hold on. What do you mean highly excellent? Like, in the fact that you woke up early or late?
Yes.
Early?
Yeah, that was early for me.
That is so great.
And I've like spent all of these years hiding behind this story that to be like a really successful CEO, you have to wake up at 5 a.m., be up before everyone. But the fact is I'm really smart from like 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Like, something turns on and my brain loves to fire. And so
how do you structure your life then, if that's the case? Like, let's say you guys have an office and you're going to work. Do you A, still wake up at 9 or 9:30, which
I'm definitely on a COVID program, so I've been moving into the the very late morning, but like, I don't start calls till 10 or 11. Then I work and like from like 11 to 6, and then have my evening exercise, do all those things, and then like work again at night, because I just work better that way. Now, the fun thing is certain members of my team have adopted that policy too. So we'll be like doing work at 10 or 11. And a lot of people really like to work 8 a.m. and start their day. And that's been the great thing about shifting to work from home. It's allowed people to tap into their natural schedule more.
Yeah, I think that's great.
And I work so much that like, I'd rather work at the times when I'm really productive. It makes more sense.
Yeah, it totally makes more sense. gosh, I mean, it sounds like working remotely is just way, it makes so much more sense. It's also true. This is why I love remote working in general. I'm not sure you care, but I'll tell you. Like, let's say you're somebody like you are, or how I am. I work at different times. My best time of working is always changing. Like, fuck, if I could tell you like how I'm most optimal and then stick to that, that would be a miracle. That is probably not going to happen in the first place. But then on top of it, like, let's say you have a meeting and you have like 10 people there. Essentially, like, everybody's on stage and you're asking them to think clearly and then give you a response to an idea or to something that you guys are working on immediately. Like, don't you think that if you wrote it out and sent it to somebody and then let them like marinate on the idea for a while, that they would have like probably a better response when they came back to you than if you do everything in the moment? And yeah, people are caught up.
And then you can also use Slack video for all the in the moment stuff. Because with marketing, that's been the biggest challenge, is like, I love brainstorming. And I find it's very hard to market by myself. It's like in a vacuum. You just like need another person at least to say like, oh, do you like this idea? And then flow off of each other. But Slack video has been great. We've gotten it all done there.
How do you balance, like, I guess now it's easier because you're working from home, but how do you balance brainstorming with actual action? Because I know, like, you work on a brand and business like you were talking about that is self-funded. So it's like, I don't know, sometimes I find working with entrepreneurs that they get so caught up in the idea of things that they might not act as quickly on trying things.
Well, this is probably a gift of being a self-funded company. There's not really the choice. Like, we have to act. So I would say, I don't know, I've never really worked in another company, so I'm not sure if I have a point of reference, but my sense is we don't spend a lot of time. We probably underinvest in ideating and brainstorming and overly invest in action.
And this is kind of like a totally separate question, but how, knowing your background, like, how did you learn and become comfortable managing, not that you do it personally, but managing the finances of the business? And I'm more curious now with the current situation. Like,
well, I thought originally your question was going to be, how did you figure out how to manage people?
Yes. That is another interesting topic.
Candidly, my bigger struggle. The managing of finances is something I'm super passionate about. I just think the most important thing an entrepreneur can understand is their own finances. And, you know, on the most basic level, I set up QuickBooks in high school and became a QuickBooks master. So I think that gives me an advantage in whatever software you use, that, like, I can find anything I want on a regular basis. And funny enough, that's actually one of the only things that is outsourced in the company now, is I've outsourced our financials. And the only reason I'm comfortable doing that is because I monitor them so hawkishly, and have access to all the tools and know how to do that. But I think it's really, for me, just understanding, like, numbers and feeling like staying consistently connected to them. I think that, you know, reporting is a tool that just creates so much clarity. I know exactly what our sales are to, I don't know them yet today, but at the end of the day, I will know exactly what they are. And I could probably guess because I've looked at some point already. And I know exactly what they were last month. And I know how we compared to the month before. And I know what our EBITDA was for the first quarter and what the goal is for the second quarter. So I think it's just a constant fluency. And it's similar to marketing, really, or to anything. It is just like making it a conversational part in your business. I've heard way too many entrepreneurs say, like, oh, I don't get involved, or I don't do that. Like, I don't like numbers. And the language around that is so scary because you have to like numbers. Or I hear people say, like, I don't like spreadsheets. Like, not optional. It's just not a choice.
Yeah, I feel like that goes back to, like, raising money in the beginning. It's like that. To me, that sounds like an idea of what you think a creative entrepreneur should be like. Is like, I stay out of the finances. I have somebody that's an expert in finance that manages that. Whereas, like, when you have to make money, you're much more invested in making sure that things line up. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's true. And certainly our finances have gotten a lot more sophisticated. But I've made as unpleasant as it has been at times. There's many hours of each of my weeks dedicated to having conversations about the numbers, looking at them, checking them in partnership with experts. But I just look at finances as a conversation that I don't have the option of exiting. And as we were talking about before, I've been a little less involved in operations lately, and that's never been my strong suit. But I feel like they're a great team, and like I feel comfortable taking my foot off the, you know, just not taking my foot off the gas, just stepping back from that a little bit. But that option never exists for financials.
And how have you learned? Actually, I'm more interested in like, how have you learned to manage yourself?
Ooh, great question.
Like, here's my interest. Have you ever had outside counsel? You're in a very unique situation because you have like family members all around you. But I don't know, like, let's say you wanted to get good at a sport, you'd have a coach that would give you shit and be on you if you were fucking up, not looking at the financials or something. Like, how have you learned how to manage yourself?
Well, okay, it's similar to my philosophy around marketing. When you bring up coaching or personal development programs, I will also try anything. So I have somewhat relentlessly tried. I've had multiple coaches. I've done multiple personal growth. I've done peer groups. And frankly, a peer group that I was in of just these really big, traditional, boring businesses that were like, what's Instagram? Oh, I have 500 employees on this like very construction type business, just these big businesses. And this group of guys, it was 17 guys and me, just were like, what's your numbers look like? What's the operational, the finance? So that was a huge pocket I picked up from the peer group. In terms of coaching, I've had so much coaching on leadership. Like, for example, last year I had 13 people who reported to me because I really didn't know any better. I just thought that I should be able to handle that. And it was a terrible experience for everyone, mostly because I didn't get back to people. I mean, I think anyone listening to this can imagine in a way. I didn't realize how terrible it is to have 13. I think at the peak, it was maybe even 15 people reporting to me. So this particular coach helped me understand like building a leadership team and how those were my direct reports and letting go. I would say I've really learned by part like desire to optimize things. But also, I've realized like in so many instances in the business, and this is to the question of how do I manage myself, like I have to step out of the way of a lot of things because in some respects, I'm like a dream leader. I've held every position in this company. I've shipped the boxes. I've managed the warehouse, everything on up. I have almost done everything at some point, which is good, but then it came to the point where I realized I was like disempowering everyone around me because I thought I knew how to do things better. And a light bulb went off that like made me realize I don't want to be the smartest person here. I want everyone to know how to do everything better than me. So learning how to manage myself is like a lifelong pursuit, I would say, but it's been learning how to let go and trust the team because we have an incredible team. And probably the biggest breakthrough I've had in self-management has been releasing perfectionism and realizing that doing something is pretty much always better than doing nothing. And one of like my favorite tangible ways to describe that is email marketing used to be just like an ordeal. Every time an email draft would come to me, either I'd go crazy with the designer, like make this font bigger and this color different, or I would just open up Photoshop and do it myself and just drive everyone crazy. And one time, like 3 or 4 years ago, we A/B tested my version, my perfect version, and the original version. And there was legitimately no difference. And I think in the end, the imperfect one actually outperformed the perfect one. And I always come back to that because I'm like, okay, we're going to do our very best. And then we have to do something and move forward. It's just forward progress. So I catch myself in that moment. And sometimes if I don't think something's good enough, then I slow everyone down trying to decide if it should be done differently. but it's just a constant commitment to like, okay, we're just going to move things forward.
Do you have to catch yourself mentally still? Actually, maybe not mentally, like emotionally.
All the time. Yeah, but also I've like really learned, you know, in any practice, like I've put a lot of hours into this one. And I've learned to say like, oh, I'm not good at this, so I'm not going to follow up with you. Can someone else help me with that? I know where my weaknesses are. And I find it so much easier to not hide them from my team. So I certainly make a lot of jokes about them. Also, making jokes is pretty much my number one skill set.
Do you...
And I can even get you to laugh if they're not good. That's the thing. It gets you through everything.
Are you currently doing anything like with coaching and with that side of things?
So I'm not.
And how have you found these things? Or people or groups?
I think that I have gotten so much support from other entrepreneurs. And typically, like, if I figure something out, I try and tell as many people as I can. and then usually they return the favor and tell me what they figured out. It's pretty funny. I have a friend who has a fitness wear brand. And about 4 years ago, we went out to lunch and she sat me down and lectured me on taking my wholesale business more seriously. And I lectured her on taking her direct to consumer more seriously. And we've been talking a lot during this quarantine, and both of us are thriving in really interesting ways. And so much of it comes back to that piece of my wholesale business ultimately has driven so much of this direct to consumer. And now her direct to consumer is thriving. And it's so fun to see how like you can support and share other people, share things that you learn with other people. I really try and surround myself with entrepreneurs, not typically in the same space, because I learned so much from them.
Yeah. I think community, like, this is me doing this podcast.
Yeah, it feels like it.
Yeah, yeah. You mean it feels like I'm literally asking you questions for myself.
Yeah, I definitely found myself having a flash of envy of like, what a cool way to spend your day. And if you ask me something, I'm going to answer it.
Yeah. It's a perfect excuse to talk to people. Also, I never imagined how much people love talking.
Well, no one really asks us what we do.
Yeah, I think that's a weird thing. Originally, I was like, I wonder how hard it's going to be to get people to come on the show. And then I realized, like, most people don't ask to talk to people in general. Like, they're not really that curious. Or they are, and they don't ask out of fear. I don't know what the motivation is or isn't. But yeah, it's been great. How have you been like knowing that the people management has been a skill to learn? Like, how do you keep momentum going without also going insane? Like, I don't know if that question makes any sense.
Well, I might already be insane. So,
especially right now, like, how do you keep momentum going while also being somewhat balanced?
I honestly just love what I do. I think it's so fun. Like, I have so much fun working every day. I love the products that we sell. They make people happy and they make their lives better and they make them feel good. And we probably get like at least 10 messages a day on in between all of our channels saying, thank you so much. This meant this to me, or because of this, this happened. And so that feels really good. And I really like running a business that just feels like kind. we really focus on kindness across everything we do. And even before I get on every call, and I'm sure if some of my team are listening, they can bust me if I don't. But I always try and say, especially right now, how are you doing? How's everyone feeling? And, I had a really shitty day. And I hosted something on a video conference for us called Unhappy Hour to talk about all the ways that you feel sad and depressed during COVID. It was actually like my favorite thing we've ever done because we all got to laugh at each other. And like, I just think it's fun. I think it's fun to build something and grow it and to continually put investment of effort and see a reward. And this is also like the most fun time for us as a business. And I know that that's crazy to say with everything going on with COVID, but I think I mean that holistically, like in the past year. I think that in the life of a business, you get little pockets of time. And like right now, most of the time when I tell someone about OSEA, they've heard of it. And imagine talking about the same thing for over 20 years and to have that conversation go from like, what's that? What do you do? Natural products? What is that? To all like, oh, I love that brand. I use this. I have this in my house.
How do you balance like being long-term viewed or like having a long-term view and focus and then also balancing like short-term pressure?
It's actually something I really struggle with because I...
Which are you more naturally based in?
Very much present moment, which is great in terms of like a way to live in the world. And I love dealing with the immediate. So I have to remind myself to make time for the long term.
Do you think that's been a benefit though, or a challenge?
I think it's ultimately a benefit because we get so much done in the immediate, but because I'm so hands-on, I definitely have to make time to work on the business versus in it, that old thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because in some sense you embarked on a long term, I guess not though, because it's been profitable. So it is more short term in like the pockets of working on it. But I think most people would start a brand and it's more of a long term vision in a way.
I guess I'm probably underselling myself in that respect. We're incredibly disciplined in the short term. There are things, for example, we never discount our products. And that's a real challenge in marketing. And it creates an incredibly creative opportunity to work with affiliates or whomever when you're just never discounting the product and to run a promotion that includes zero discounts. So I think it's really a simultaneous thing. And since you phrased it that way, it made me think more clearly that I'm consciously aware of building value in two pockets, which is the immediate, which is the drive to earn revenue, to be responsible for all of the bills and to make payroll and to do everything we need to there, but also doing so in a way that's building long-term brand equity and brand value.
And I guess, is there any like advice that you would, now knowing everything that you have worked through, is there any advice you wish you would have gotten or would have given yourself coming back to the business that you now know? If I've even phrased
well,
that
the first
correctly.
Piece of advice I would have given myself was to spend on ads 5 years ago when we spent zero on ads. We only started that a few years ago because eyeballs were so cheap then. In terms of
What's your view? Sorry to interrupt you, but I'm curious. What's your view on customer acquisition present moment and paid media and just that whole world?
I'm all in. We're going harder than ever before. I think that we're really lucky that we have a product that serves people really well right now. They can do an at-home facial. People need to take moments to take care of themselves. And fundamentally, I think that everything our brand believes in is like the perfect thing for right now. Just really like being kind to yourself and to others and taking care of yourself. So I have definitely gone even harder on acquisition.
And then since I interrupted you, I'll get back to the advice piece.
Maybe we leave that part out. my advice to myself, I think something happened in the past couple years where I started having more fun and being a lot more comfortable with like my leadership style and the kind of company I want to build. And I wish I could tell that to myself to get that sooner, because I didn't have as much fun before. I've always had fun. So maybe I think I just didn't feel as confident in running a business like the way that felt right to me, and as confident in what I think is probably my best skill period is intuition and listening to that intuition. So long answer, my advice would have been like, trust your gut.
Yeah, I think that's so hard. I had a great time talking.
So nice talking to you too.
Bread receipt.